I do want to talk a little bit about faith from a different angle. And that is, I want to talk to you a little bit about how I came into the church. Now, if you have read the editorial in this update this week, you notice that I have made the point that I've been in the church now for 40 years, that I've been baptized now for 40 years, and 40 is an interesting number. As you know, it's a time of trial. It's a time of testing. It's a time of when the Israelites had to wander through the wilderness for 40 years. And, you know, as I pointed out, even though I hope I grew somewhat, but there's a lot of things I still have to do, work on, overcome. By no means do I feel that I have made it. But it's still interesting to reflect. And I have been doing this recently quite a bit. And so I wanted to share with you how God called me into the church. I mean, how did he do it? You see, I believe God looks at people and he looks at their interests, he looks at their strengths, he looks at their weaknesses, and everybody is different. And in some cases, people were drawn into the church, into the truth, because they heard about Christmas, and there are other things. In my case, it was evolution. It was a concept of creation versus evolution. There was an advertisement in a German TV paper, which was, of course, run by, you know, at that time it was, the German version was Die reine Wahrheit, the plain truth, and then later it was changed to Klein Wahr. And they advertised this booklet. And some of you who might have been in the church for a long time will remember, of course, that's the German version. It's about the dolphins. It's about the dolphins and also about another funny creature, the platypus. And so this questions the evolution using these two examples. And so I was interested in that. I was 16 years old at the time, so I ordered that booklet. And a one-year free subscription of The Plain Truth came with it. And then subsequent to that, I ordered this booklet, and you might remember that. Perhaps some of you have seen it in the English version. It's about the birds and all the claims which are being made that this all evolved. And, you know, we were discussing evolution at the time in school. And even though I wasn't very familiar with, you know, obviously the Bible at that point, somehow I always felt kind of uncomfortable about this concept. This concept that, you know, Adam and Eve never existed. What the Bible says, that means nothing. You know, that's just figurative or fairy tales. And that, you know, way back when there was this organic soup and gases from the universe bombarded that soup and the cell was kind of quote-unquote created. It was all done because of time and chance. There was no plan, there was no God, there was nothing. That's what we were told in school. At the same time, we were told that there was really no flood, that was all mythological. As I said, there was really no Adam and Eve, there was no creation of God. So I never quite accepted that, but of course I had never really studied deeply into it. And so this was kind of the introduction for me to look into this issue more closely. And so I read the articles. At that time, we ran them in The Plain Truth about the alleged evolution of the horse. And of course, what they did, they used the remains of a rock badger, Klippschliefer in German, and said, oh, that was first horse. And they had all these nice paintings, and then the horse got bigger and bigger, so they're using all kinds of different animals to prove the evolution of the horse. And of course, then they pointed out, rightly so, that evolution had a problem even with the concept of living fossils, which shouldn't even exist, like this platypus, you know, which is kind of a mixture, if you please, between a bird and a reptile and a mammal. And even sharks pose a problem because sharks give birth to young ones. See, they don't lay eggs and still being looked upon as a fish. Now, and then you've heard about marsupials. I never heard of that word in English. I know what it is in German. These are those animals who carry little ones in the pouch, say like a kangaroo or a koala bear. And they said, well, you know, they just developed in those isolated areas like Australia, see, there was this, you know, surrounded by oceans, and so therefore they could not be evolved anywhere else, so that's where they were. And of course, then they got a problem with the opossum, which is also a marsupial, and so they can't explain how that could have happened. But the biggest issue, of course, to me, as it should be to everyone actually who reads the Bible and hears about evolution, is the quote-unquote evolution of man. So is man just the product of an evolutionary process coming from the apes? And one big candidate who was always used to prove that was the Neanderthal. Now, you see, I grew up in Germany, right where they had found the first Neanderthal remain. I'm not saying that my family is descendant from the Neanderthals, but it was quite interesting to go to that museum they have over there, the Neanderthal Museum, and to look at that, you know, Neanderthal exhibit. And that's how they portrayed him. It was this hairy creature, you know, bent forward. They gave him these monkey, ape-like looking features to make the point that he was still an ape, but kind of a missing link between ape and man. Now, in the meantime, more remains have been found, and it was very clearly established that that first remain was a specimen of a Neanderthal who was suffering from arthritis, and that is why he was moving forward in that sense. Of course, nobody knows that he had hair like that, because all they found were some bones. You know, in studying this topic over the years, I strongly concluded from all the evidence which was available then, and I'm more convinced than ever now because of additional evidence which has been given out and found, that Neanderthal was nothing else but a modern human being. He was not an animal. He never had been an animal. He was a modern human being like you and I. Now, maybe not quite like you and I, because he might have degenerated in that sense, living in caves and all, but nevertheless, he was not an animal. And by the way, let me just say that this has always been the teaching, and I should say the doctrine, of the Church of God, the Worldwide Church of God. See, these were the articles which we were publishing in the 70s, and very clearly I found an article again. I found the English version, I have the German version, of course, which was published in December of 1970, about the missing link found. And this article was published actually in the English Plain Truths in June, July of 1970, where it was clearly dogmatically stated, based on everything we can understand, that the Neanderthal was a human being, not an ape. So this has never been taught any other way, except when all these changes took place, because you had another problem. So if the Neanderthal was a human being, which all the evidence says, which the Church has always said it was, or he was, then what about the age? Because, you know, the scientists will tell you, oh, yeah, but he lived about, what, 13, 15, whatever, 1,000 years ago. And if we believe in a 6,000-year plan, which we do, then there's a problem. Now, the same problem, though, applies to any other, quote-unquote, species within the human family, because even the human Homo sapiens, the modern man, Cro-Magnon man, for instance, they all are being determined as being older than 6,000 years, according to science. So now what do you do with that? Now you look at the method, and it's the radiocarbon method. And the radiocarbon method is the only method which is being used to determine the age of those bones, and there are other methods they are based on the radiocarbon method. Now if that radiocarbon method is wrong, then of course, or not reliable, then of course those age determinations are wrong. And so, again, the Plain Truth had published article upon article to the effect that it is wrong and had pointed out why. Why it is not reliable, why it cannot be reliable. And of course, further research has proven that beyond any doubt. As I said, all that was clearly established until those changes came. And I remember when I say these changes, you know, in the worldwide Church of God, I'm talking about when everything that what we had ever believed was taken away from us. Suddenly we believed in the Trinity. Suddenly we believed in an immortal soul. Suddenly we believed in we go to heaven when we die, and, you see. And of course, that was one of them. In fact, the evolutionary concept was an early one which was being introduced because there were some self-proclaimed experts who suddenly believed in evolution. And so they started to bring that to the quote-unquote attention of the ministry. And so then they had ministerial programs in which papers were given out, according to which the radiocarbon method was totally okay, and those age determinations were totally okay, according to which then the modern man and the Neanderthal man, they were older than 6,000 years. No explanation was ever given as to why that could be. No explanation was ever given as to why the church had been wrong in all those determinations. It was just given, quote-unquote, on faith. In other words, the idea was, you just accept it. You just swallow it. Well, of course, I never swallowed it, and I could see where that was going. It was all going in the wrong direction. You see, Neanderthal was never a missing link. There were other interesting concepts. There was one concept, somebody came up with the idea, that when you go back to the scripture in Genesis, where it says the sons of God, you know, came into the daughters of men, and then according to some wrong translations, it says, and giants came out of them. The idea is that it was man and Neanderthal interbreeding. Of course, that's a nonsense of a concept, but that is even something now in different ways scientists come up with. They say, oh, there was interbreeding going on between modern man and Neanderthal. Well, I mean, because two human beings interbred, that's really what it is all about. So I'm coming to something when I'm going to tell you these stories because we are going to produce a new booklet. And this new booklet is now entering the second review cycle. And it will go into all of these issues and a lot more. For instance, Charles Darwin said very clearly that we are today nothing else but walking amoebas. Now, have you ever seen an amoeba? You look at an amoeba under the microscope, and it's an ugly-looking, slimy creature, right? Now, I couldn't quite figure, even way back when, that I would ever marry a walking amoeba, so it doesn't make too much sense. But these are the kind of things which evolution has come up with, all in a desperate attempt to deny the existence of God and a plan and the fact that man was created. Now, my studies continued on this topic. It has always been an intriguing topic for me, I felt, and I'm still intrigued by it. And so further questions came up. You know, there are some who say, those who believe that God recreated the surface of the earth 6,000 years ago, but they don't believe that he recreated it. They say, oh, well, you know, at that time God created everything, so he created all the dinosaurs, and he created man at the same time. And then they even pointed some obscure findings allegedly showing that dinosaurs and man lived together side by side. But then you hear about reports regarding the Loch Ness Monster, regarding Ogopogo, regarding other sea creatures, not just in those places. You hear about them all over the world. And so you wonder, is there some truth perhaps to that? Could that be possible? And, you know, you want to answer those questions based on the Bible. So you look at the Bible, and you find that when God recreated the surface of the earth, on the fifth day, he created great sea creatures, as the New King James Bible said it. Now, some translate whales, but the Hebrew word actually describes a dragon. That's a word, a dragon. Now, you may look at a whale, and you don't necessarily think that a whale looks like a dragon. The point is, the same sea creatures are later mentioned, for instance, in the book of Job. And Job talks about the Leviathan, and he talks about Behemoth, or as I say, Behemoth. And I had to check that out in the pronunciation dictionary, and both pronunciations apparently are correct. And some say, well, the Leviathan, that was just a crocodile, and God just used some hyperbole to describe this crocodile. And the same they say about Behemoth, that was just a hippopotamus. And so God, again, used some hyperbole. Now, of course, that would make no sense because God was talking about these creatures, comparing them with his greatness insofar as Job was concerned. You know, if he would have used hyperbole, then obviously he wouldn't have made a point. And the point is, too, that Job knew these creatures. They were still in existence at the time when Job was alive. So who are those dragon-like creatures? And is it possible that some of them might have survived? The point being, God created them with man at the time when he created man. See, these were not dinosaurs from prior to Adam who then had been extinguished, because you see, the point is, when it says the earth became void and empty, every life on this earth had been extinguished. There was nothing left. God had to recreate. And so that's what he did. So that was quite interesting. Now some say, well, I don't believe in the existence of those. I'm not saying that the Bible can prove it. What I am saying is we shouldn't just dismiss it out of hand, because we have ministers in God's church. We have wives of ministers in God's church who claim that they have seen, for instance, Ogopogo. So are we saying, well, they all were hallucinating and we can take their word for it? You see, there are too many eyewitness reports all over the world. Pictures, some of them may be fake, but not all of them. We can't just dismiss it all, but my point is, the Bible would not have to say anything against it. And that's what we got to understand. When we deal with these kind of issues, we need to be factual. We can't just come up with all kinds of ridiculous ideas like some do, you know, saying, oh, God created those bones and he created them in an old state so that people got fooled by that. No, we got to go by the facts, right? And only by the facts. And so, what about Bigfoot? What about Sasquatch? What about Yeti? What about the abominable snowman? Does it exist? Does it not exist? What is it? Again, my point is this. Too many reliable, and I'm saying reliable, eyewitness reports have been there that it would be very strange to just ignore them all and say, oh, well, there's nothing to it. And my further point is, the Bible doesn't prevent that from being the case. Now, I'm not saying at all that it has anything to do with a missing link, because man did not evolve. But you see, I'm not saying that this necessarily has to be a man. It could be an ape. It could be an animal who hasn't been detected yet. But it could be a man too. Again, in a degenerated state. Now, what I found interesting is that we have by now produced 40 booklets. Here comes at number 40 again. The very first booklet which the Church of the Eternal God has published was the one on evolution. Now, we had one before on Urban prophecy, but that one was actually written by me while we were still in CGCF. And then when we started CEG, we got the copyright and permission to publish that. But the first book that actually was published in CEG was the booklet on evolution. The very first booklet which is going to be published, not that we kind of even thought about that until I recently thought about it, but by that time it was already all written. The very first booklet which is going to be published after those 40 booklets is the one I'm talking about, the one which goes into many questions pertaining to evolution, the Bible. Questions like, why was there destruction? What caused, technically, the elimination of all those animals? In the book on evolution, we talk about the fact that it did occur, but not really why and how. In this one, we are going to talk about, why do we even have vicious animals? Did God create vicious animals then, prior to Adam, and now? If not, why are some vicious? We are talking about what kinds of animals God created when he created man. Did he create some huge, big sea creatures like Leviathan? Well, of course, the answer is yes. I already gave you that answer, but the book explains, based on the Bible, why that is so, how that is so. We are talking about the 6,000-year plan, that in fact there is a 6,000-year plan. But if there is a 6,000-year plan, we also talk about the fact that all the methods which are being used to determine the age of modern man, the Neanderthal man, and many other animals, is wrong. And we explain why it's wrong. And even the founder, the inventor of the method, admitted at the time that it is wrong if certain conditions have not always been constant. And we can prove from archaeology, from history, from the Bible, that not all the conditions remain constant. So by necessity, it's wrong. See, they have looked at living organisms and have determined that those living organisms, based on the radiocarbon method, were dead for thousands of years. That's how wrong that method is. Now, we talk about these things. We talk about the question, did angels actually have intercourse with men producing giants? As many believe, as I believe most who believe in the Bible believe it or not. They believe that. They believe that angels actually, or fallen angels, had intercourse with men, and then they produced those giants. And the booklet explains why this is a horrible blasphemy to believe that. And there's much more. And so, as I said, we have entered now, and are going to enter now, the second stage of the review cycle, and we hopefully will be able to produce this booklet very soon. And then there are more in the making, actually. But, you know, I just wanted to give you these few facts to show you how, in my case, God picked my interest. Now, you think about your calling and how, what kind of interest did you have and what intrigued you to become more interested in the truth. But you see, to me, this issue of evolution versus creation is one of the most important issues there could ever be, because it boils down to this. Either the Bible is correct or evolution is correct. Both can't be correct. If you believe in evolution, you cannot believe in the Bible, and vice versa. And so by presenting these facts and by presenting more and more of these facts even as they become available, it should strengthen our faith. Here we talk about faith again. In the accuracy, even the literal accuracy of the Bible. And of course, in God, our Creator. And we should also then have all the confidence we could possibly have that God knows what He is doing in our life and that our life has a purpose. And that we are not here just because of time and chance and happenstance.